Are you ready?
I'm ready. You ready?
I'm ready.
Hit record, girlfriend.
Okay. You're listening to Pop the Kettle On with Nicole Essio and Dr. Rachel Bushing.
Hi, I'm Rach.
And I'm Nicole. Welcome to Pop the Kettle On.
This is the Parenting, Womanhood, Marriage, Baby and Life Review podcast. We dissect the good, the bad and the ugly of family life and have a laugh about how it's depicted in popular culture.
Because it's always tea time.
And if I don't laugh, I'll cry.
Me too. Hey, Rach.
Hey, Nick. How you going?
I'm good, my darling. How are you?
I'm good.
That's good.
I am good.
That's excellent. I'm just sick of heat. It's supposed to be late April, and I'm done with it. So if you don't mind,
I'll sort it out.
Sort it out.
Yeah, thank you. That's my job.
Excellent.
I'm in charge of it.
Good.
I'm a lady boss these days.
I love that.
I'll make it happen.
Good, good.
Like excellent. Beyonce.
By the end of the week.
All right.
That'll be great.
Got it. It's in the diary.
What's happening? How's life?
Busy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 weeks just goes like that.
I know. It does. Mental. I know, exactly. I had another nephew turn 18, which is why we're recording this a little bit later, because I was hanging out having birthday dinner, which was lovely.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Have I seen you since my sister's 21st?
No, but no. I saw photos on Facebook.
Yeah, that was maybe a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Oh, Aries. Just a shout out to all the Aries babies celebrating their month.
Was it good?
There's a lot of Aries in my family.
Are there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, we're heading into birthdayness. Like, May is one of our big birthday months.
Right. Mm. Gotcha.
There you go. Mm. Isn't it weird how that happens in families?
Totally weird.
Because we've got May and August is, like, huge.
Oh, okay. And that's, like, dead on my calendar. Wow. Family-wise. Yeah. Nothing's happening around there.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. That does creep me out a little bit, having to, like, backdate 9 months from those months and just being, like... What event happens at this time? So let's just skip over that.
Yeah, we don't have to think about that.
No.
Especially when it's, you know, your birthday.
Indeed. Exactly right. So is this a good time to mention my blue tea?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Took me by surprise.
Can I? Actually, I need to take a photo of that because like a teal blue. It's beautiful. Uh-huh.
Do you want Hope Street branding?
Oh, of course.
Hope Street is a local charitable organisation, works with people who are needing, from what I understand, we'll have to Google it. They are local in South Brisbane and they run a couple of cafes called Hope Street that is... All of the people who are working there are people who encounter barriers with employment and training, and they have two awesome cafes. One is Hope Street in South Brisbane, and then the other one is on Boundary Street here in West End.
Yeah.
So my keep cup is Hope Street, keep cup, and my tea is blue.
It is quite literally blue. I don't know if my photo is going to capture it properly, but I will post it and you guys can let me know if it looks blue to you.
I might give it a go.
But it says... that it has butterfly peas, chamomile, rose petals, vanilla and rose, natural flavour. What is a butterfly pea? Am I going to have to
absolutely
Google
no
that?
Frickin' idea.
I'm assuming it's a flower.
Our show notes are growing by the second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I never actually do any.
I have no idea. So, but my lovely friend Amanda of Spilt Milk Psychology, and her and I are running some workshops, so that's why I'm super busy too. Two weeks' time, we're delivering a full-day workshop on birth trauma
for, for
other psychologists. So Amanda went ahead and bought this, like, mixed tea set from Tea Tonic, which is an Australian company.
Yeah.
And it just came in this box, and I went, blue magic, that looks like fun. And then it says on it that apparently it's blue, and if you put lemon in it, it turns to purple. And, I mean, that just sounds like...
magic.
We're at Hogwarts, basically.
Right.
You know?
This is a whole spell situation.
We all need a bit of magic in our day.
Yeah,
so I might just have to buy a whole massive pack of that.
Yeah. Well, you have to taste it first.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it tastes. It's probably a little bit hot.
We're going to have slurping noises now.
Prepare for slurp.
Okay. I'm going to talk over the top of slurping.
No, it's too hot because it's in the keep cup. I might just take the lid off and let it breathe.
Good idea.
All right.
So this fortnight, Miss Rach, we were going to talk about step everything.
Step stuff.
Step stuff. Mm. So I was like from Brady to blended and everything in between. How step parenting represented in... Yeah. popular culture. Yeah. And of course, we've talked very briefly about step stuff in our Step Brothers episode, but that was less about step stuff and more about my dislike for the movie Step Brothers. It turned into a whole thing. So you brought notes because you are prepared and brilliant.
Yes.
So why don't you start with step stuff?
Step stuff. Well,
every little step. How's that? It's like a song. It's a boy band.
Step by step.
Oh my goodness.
Ooh, baby. Gotta get you in my world. Those might not be the words.
No, that's a different song.
Oh.
But yes, they are the words. Wonderful. And that's sounds like New Kids on the Block.
Something like that.
And every oh my gosh, every little step is what's his name? Mrs. Houston, Mr. Houston. Bobby Brown.
Oh my god. Now you gotta sing it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Every little step I take, you will be there. That one.
Okay, that's it. That's what we're gonna call the episode. Every Little Step by Bobby Brown and what he can teach us about step families.
And you know that I can edit, so I'll leave your singing in.
Stop it. My singing. Stop it. I've heard your singing professionally, Nicole. Now stop it now. I did actually watch the Brené Brown documentary last night. Not documentary. Netflix special. Yeah. So just step into your vulnerability. Courage is about showing up. La, la, la. All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. I'm still going to edit it out.
All right. Well, I went down a little bit of a kind of like, you know, step mother trope kind of rabbit hole.
Excellent.
Because being a psychologist, I was like, I get very like strangely fascinated by the historical literature origins type stuff.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Take me down the rabbit hole.
Speaking of things because you like good recommendations and just good shit in general, Richard Feidler interviewed this woman who he's had on a few times, but this week she talked – she's like a fairy tales researcher.
Oh.
And she was talking about some fairy tale, some Russian fairy tale called Vasilisa.
Ooh.
But she was also talking about Hansel and Gretel mythology. And actually, it dovetailed really well with this stuff.
Yeah.
I was doing some Google and then, lo and behold, my mate Richard's talking to someone about – and that researcher as well didn't talk a lot about this in this podcast, but she was kind of saying the thinking around the evil stepmother is that – some of it is like this displacement of anger that you have towards your mother or father.
Interesting.
That when parents split up in order to kind of maintain this idea of, let's say, God, like my father moves on and remarries or whatever, that you're wanting to kind of maintain this pristine image of the father in your mind. So that there's
so
kind
everything
of,
transfers to the stepmother.
Yeah, that she's kind of like the one, you know, pushing the buttons and kind of turning him evil or uncaring or whatever.
Interesting.
So either like mother dies or abandons or whatever.
Yeah.
But no one's angry at the mother. Because I was saying in Hansel and Gretel, there's two versions. One is that the parents just abandon the children to the woods.
Oh.
And that...
These fairy tales are very dark when you look at them, the original versions.
Into a lot of it. Ooh. Yeah, don't go down a Google rabbit hole like me about, like, the trope of the stepmother and all this kind of stuff.
No, but, you know, that makes it makes a lot of sense because your father in that situation is half of your genetic makeup. So you're actually protecting yourself against your own point of view of yourself, you know, because your sense of self comes half from mum and dad, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so thinking evil thoughts about him is saying half of you is not quite great, perhaps.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I tied it up in a little bow.
You tied it up in a little bow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, Cinderella and Hansel and Gretel now. I didn't realise there was abandonment issues.
Well, apparently, and I can't think of the era, but it's around kind of, you know, a lot of this comes from as well, like, say, high maternal death in childbirth
of
and,
course.
You know, plague and poverty and, you know, famine and all of that kind of thing, where the reality of a dead parent was more present in everyday life than what we would experience. So that particularly, say, in wealthy households, they're kind of saying that, you know, if your mother, for whatever reason, isn't around, it's pretty common that the father, of course, is going to remarry because there's going to be this new convenient person to
look after the children.
Exactly. Do all of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And that that new woman in the picture is obviously a threat to inheritance.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. So our evil stepmother trope stuff comes from way back.
Way, way back.
And the fact that it continues to be fed and wow.
Yeah.
We have some serious hang-ups from many generations back, don't we?
And I think that's the thing, is such a strong archetype that it's such a familiar story that I think that also in our culture, whenever you're encountering a blended family, I think there's probably two things, because some of these articles I was looking at, like Psychology Today and stuff like that, that I'll link, is that, you know, this author is talking about, as a psychologist from their point of view, that it's a convenient archetype. You know, he talked a lot about that idea of maintaining the father's integrity, that even sometimes in some families, stepmothers will report, you know, I'm sometimes the mouthpiece for difficult messages, or I'm sort of taking the blame for what's going on here, but I step into that knowingly because that's sometimes what the children need to do. Like, there needs to be some rejection of who is this new person coming in. Because it's very difficult for kids in a time of transition who want to feel loved and accepted to have this new person come in. And that I think there is research, I didn't look this up, but there's some research about how long it takes for that average transition to actually kind of work out all the kinks.
Wow.
That I think it's at least 2 or 3 years.
So the fact that Carol Brady could move in to Mr. Brady's architecturally designed house... and everybody was happy families. And by the way, they all called themselves Brady. Where was their dad? The girl's dad? They didn't... Surely that Brady wasn't their surname. This vexes me completely. But, you know, Marsha Brady, Jan Brady, Cindy Brady. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But I suppose that's a whole other thing about taking on the surname. Because perhaps we're talking about something in the 60s that maybe was a bit more common.
Yeah, maybe.
That because mum remarries and mum takes that new name that the children do.
Yeah. So there's no mention, from what I can understand, in Brady TV land of a Mr. Carroll way back, dad of the girls.
Mm.
But obviously in the movies there is a former husband and, yeah, it's quite that's quite funny. But that idea that they just went into it and everything was fine and happy and there were occasional little scuffles.
Yeah.
Does not bear any resemblance to real life.
I'm thinking too is like episode one of the Brady Bunch, is it like literally the wedding is over and we're moving in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
So I imagine there's some kind of courtship period that's going on.
Yeah.
But they've not actually cohabited, lived together.
You know, with all the nostalgia TV going on, we need a prequel to the Brady Bunch. We need a whole romancing Mrs. romancing Carol kind of situation.
Oh, totally. Yes, the backstory.
The backstory.
I know. It is kind of creepy, isn't it?
It is really creepy.
Where are those, you know, prior parents? What's going
where's,
on?
Where's Mrs. First Mrs. Brady?
Yeah. Because the other thing I read is that every step family is born of grief in some way.
Wow.
Which is why it's so difficult.
Oh, like in, that's so in, a
Yeah,
big one.
In order to make a new family, something has happened to the prior family.
Yes,
and either there's a death or a divorce.
Yeah.
And okay. either way, those kids have had to navigate, you know, what
trauma
does all of this mean for me?
Abandonment issues and...
Yeah.
Wow.
So, of course, they're not going to naturally just kind of adjust to this new person who, again, we've got this baggage of, like, the evil person coming into my family and trying to kind of, you know... bloody cook us in a pot or put us in rags.
Yeah, make us scrub the floor. Mm. See, I didn't have any of that experience, obviously. My parents were married until I was in my 20s, I think, by the time that all happened. And they, neither of whom have made, you know, new partnerships and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Both of Paul's parents have, you know, after their divorce, got married again. And we've been incredibly lucky to have amazing step-parents on his side that, you know, were welcomed with open arms and who welcomed all of us with open arms as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the trope didn't kind of fit in our family.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's obviously not reality for a lot of people. especially the Bradys.
I just, forgive me, I'm still trying to like work. I have this imagery in your mind that because your parents haven't remarried, I'm like, please do. Like, please. Can it be a stepbrothers type situation for Nicole?
I'm not sharing a bunk bed with some random.
That would be great.
And crashing a boat.
I would just love to see the drama unfold.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Well, I do come from a blended family,
I suppose.
Yeah. But I have a handy way of referring to my father's families as franchises.
I love that.
Which is kind of slightly unkind. Because sometimes people are like, huh? And I'm like, it's just kind of like, you know, I'm a child born of pain. I have to make a joke about it. No, but I just think it's funny because he had his first family with my mum and there's three of us. And then there was like, after they split, actually, there was quite a big gap until my dad never married but has been with his current partner for now 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, slightly a little bit more than that. So, yeah, she is my lovely stepmother. Yeah. But also I think we were teenagers when she came on the scene.
Ooh, rough
and
time.
We never – yeah, I think so. But at the same time, we were born of that kind of 80s parental split thing where we were like full-time with mum, every second weekend with dad.
Yeah.
So actually our experience of having my stepmom come on the scene was like, yay, a woman and fun. And, you know, I feel like my dad, bless his soul, was sometimes a little lost as to know what to do with three girls on the weekends.
Yeah.
And look, she's also a very easy woman to get along with.
That's so nice.
Yeah. You know, I think I did – I've heard some research that I've not looked up for this podcast, but I remember there being something about not just how long it takes for children to adjust to a change of circumstances, a couple of years.
Yeah.
But also there's something around the age of the children as well.
Of course.
By way of – you know, I think that when children are really young, if there's another person introduced into the family, they more naturally just kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, you can be second mum and, you know, like three men and a little lady type situation. Like, I've got three dads. Like, why not? That's, like, no big deal.
Yeah.
And that when they're younger, they'll accept that parental authority a bit more readily.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, okay, like, I've got those two parents, they're separate house, that's fine.
Yeah.
As the kids get a little bit older, they do not cope well with some person coming in and going, I'm going to be the new person in town.
Yeah.
And I think my stepmother's experience with us was very much she never tried to like take the place of the mother.
Yeah.
But also, like I say, we weren't there full time. It was like a completely different
scenario. So she could be fun auntie kind of fun, you know, older sister.
Exactly.
Even, really.
So she really improved her life.
Yeah.
And then they have two kids. So, and sometimes I lose myself in how I talk about my family because it's my youngest sister, so born of the second franchise, who just turned 21.
Yeah.
So being 39 this year, I'm like, my sister just turned 21. But people are sometimes like, huh?
You what?
I'm like, oh, well, she's my half-sister, but also,
Yeah.
So,
It's amazing, isn't it? That whole, I mean, how can somebody be a half-sister? I find that really, that terminology really weird.
I know.
But I love that you have a shorthand for how you describe your family. Like you say, you know, franchise one and franchise two. Like that's just a shorthand in the same way that I say bigs and smalls about my two kind of batches of kids. You develop a shorthand that makes it easier to kind of explain.
Thanks for that, Fee Nicole. And I think what I'm trying to say is that I think you never know what you're going to say that's going to trigger someone because not everyone has that same experience.
Of course.
For some people, if I describe my dad remarrying as starting another franchise, that is like an incredibly painful idea.
Of course. Yeah.
For us, it was joyous.
Yeah.
You should have seen us when my brother was born, who's now 23.
Yeah.
I was, get it right, Rach. I was 15. My older sister was 18.
Yeah.
I remember she was in grade 12. And so we were all in high school. And I just remember, like, the day he was born, like, we were just prancing around school going, like, my brother is born. And it's, like, so exciting. And we just, like, oh. And I think it never occurred to us to be in any way upset or threatened or anything.
Mm.
Maybe a lot of that's down to how the adults navigated the whole situation. But
and
we were
is
just,
that
like, so excited. Like, here's a baby.
Well, yeah, because they're squidgy and delicious.
I know. And I was like 15 and I was, you know, and there's the odd time actually because I was 18 when my sister was then came along.
Mm.
There'd be the occasion where you'd be carrying them around as babies and infants and people assume it's your child.
Uh-huh.
And I'd be like, oh! No, no, no.
And you'd be really explicit about the fact that this was your sister.
Yes. Not the right situation.
Yeah, exactly. But mm-hmm. that's obviously not other people's experiences. And so the adults navigating the situation, does that determine primarily how kids cope with step everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it needs – the leadership has to come from up above.
Yeah.
Upper management.
Upper management.
And yeah, you know, I think – you know, another thing that comes to mind is that because I do often support families navigating, you know, divorce and transition and stuff like that. And, you know, as I've been going through workshops doing reading about what to advise people, the best advice is that when parents split, obviously it's best to do conscious uncoupling.
Thank you, Gwyneth.
I know. Blessed be. We say Gwyneth. I just have to take a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
To channel Gwyneth. She was on a podcast recently.
Yeah.
Was it Dax?
I think it was.
Yeah, someone. Yeah. I listened to it.
Yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
Oh, that's interesting. She's talking about how funny it is that everyone's like conscious uncoupling. And she's like, there's a book called Conscious Uncoupling. I didn't make it up. I stole it from the book. It's a term. It's a word.
It's actually a thing.
It's a thing.
And they seem to have navigated that reasonably well by the looks of things.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's right. And I think that's the thing, is that, like, doing things intentionally as much as possible, because there's elements you can't control.
Yeah,
but trying to think out of this upsetting, uncontrollable, not what I want to have happen situation, what is it that I can grab onto that I am able to exert some control or positive influence in this situation?
Mm.
I think one of the most hurtful things for parents is, like, this person I loved and created a family with is suddenly my enemy or worst nightmare, or turning into, like, because I think there's also a lot of fear.
Mm.
And it's probably around this whole idea of, like, now they're suddenly the ex slash the enemy, and they may take things from me.
Yeah.
And so back to, like, the best advice is that, like, they say to people, like, do it consciously, and also come up with a written parenting plan as early as possible.
Of course.
And one of the reasons why lawyers say that is that good lawyers say, we don't want to be involved. We don't want to know you.
Mm-hmm.
It's way better if, as early as possible, that you're still continuing to have those co-parenting conversations. Where do we live? What's going to happen? You know, you don't know all the answers, but at least if you get in the habit of writing it down and treating it as though this is a contract and an agreement, it makes it so much easier when they're, you know, many people split amicably and they're fine until someone wants to move interstate.
Yeah.
Someone wants to repartner.
Yeah.
Or have another baby. Or take the kids on some European holiday for a month. Or take them to bloody, somewhere a little bit more unsafe or whatever. And what have you got written down in your agreement that you would need both parents to have to consent to that versus just one? And how are those things going to be negotiated and handled? Because I think what is actually fairly common is that when people repartner, there's this play for control again.
Right.
That sometimes the new partner coming in will say to the parent, you know, these certain things aren't fair.
Mm.
These certain things don't look right to me.
And particularly if they've got their own kids with an ex as well, that they've got a particular agreement. So there's, I mean, geez, it's bad enough trying to negotiate with someone who was brought up in a different house that you're married to around child raising,
totally.
Let alone adding an extra person on either side kind of thing to that whole mix.
Beggars belief.
Because
you and your co-parent, of course, are going to disagree on particular things.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine.
And would have done prior as well, I imagine.
Exactly right. Mm. And then you're, like, repartnering with someone who potentially has their own kids, who has their own idea about doing things, and it's kind of like. So, you know, like, I think that lawyers will say that that's often when things can turn much more kind of like suddenly we have a conflict where we didn't have before.
Yeah.
Or the fear of that conflict, you know, that whatever we lock down now, like we're splitting up, it's not going to work, or we'll separate, or we'll look at kind of like how's this going to go, is that there's a lot of fear with like whatever we decide upon now is going to really bite me in the butt, or I'm losing control over, you know, half of my child's life. Mm. And someone else could come along and try and exert their own control and influence over my children. It's, I think, very, that was scary.
I think it was really demonstrated beautifully in the movie Stepmom. Have you seen that with Julia Roberts, Susan Sarandon? Yeah. No. Spoiler alert if anyone hasn't seen it. Mm-hmm. Can I spoil for you, right?
Yeah, she dies. Happy?
Yeah, she dies.
I googled it as part of this thing.
She dies.
Haven't seen it, but yeah, I've already been spoiled.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's that control kind of issue prior to dying. And I mean, that would obviously add an impetus and a kind of imperative that was greater than even regular kind of
so
life.
So Susan Sarandon is mum number one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's... Yes. Has a terminal illness.
She does.
And Julia Roberts comes in as the young
tart. She is the young, gorgeous new wife.
Is this correct?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I'm guessing, because I've not seen it, I'm just writing the plot in my head.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that there's a lot of conflict and upset, and then in the end they make peace and Susan Sarandon, you know, slowly, gently fades away. And
yes.
It's this lovely moment of like, yes, I'm
handing
passing.
Over.
Okay.
Mm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I guessed it.
Because Hollywood. But yeah, I mean, that would add a whole other level of, my goodness, stuff as well.
Yeah.
But what other examples of like pop culture stuff do you think has shown step-parenting well or not so well? Like are there examples that people can kind of look at and go, that would be a good way to do things?
Well, actually, because I was Googling this trope, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, it's everywhere. And I'm like, actually, it's not everywhere. It's in fairy tales.
Yeah.
Because I actually sort of like looked down a few listicles of kind of like, you know, where is this kind of playing out?
Mm.
And it's like reruns of like various fairy tales. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's kind of – and Stepmom comes up a lot.
Yeah.
That's why I read about it.
And Tangled, you know, is another one.
Yeah.
And she takes her away from it and she's like, yeah.
Yeah. Snow White. I think that Snow White, the evil queen, and again, I think in the history of that, there's different versions of like what happens to Snow White's mother and how that all kind of comes to be.
Was Disney, sorry, just to interrupt, did Disney lose his parent, one of his parents when he was a child? Because every Disney movie, somebody dies.
No, but that comes from the fairy tales.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I think.
Mm, but there seems to be a fascination though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that also comes from this idea of for children, it's tapping into one of their greatest fears.
Yeah.
Because all children find that a really universal experience, that if I didn't have my parent here as my kind of safety, what else, what would I be capable of and who would I be? And so it like kicks off like the hero's journey type thing as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because the kid then has to kind of, you know, they're put in these adverse circumstances with not the parent to come and show
save
them a way
the
through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Bambi's.
Yeah.
Bambi's mom.
I know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Mufasa.
Simba. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other one that gets me is like in Nemo where the mum dies right at the start.
It's yes.
Like,
I know. Gets you
yeah,
every
so,
time.
But actually there's dead parents everywhere, but there's not actually that many of the, you know, like
recoupling.
The... No.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, so... you know, obviously Blended is a comedy movie with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, and it's very silly, and there's a whole... They have this whole... Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. So they have this whole holiday experience that is designed for blended families. They go to it like an island or
right.
whatever. I don't even know where it is.
Uh-huh.
But it's all about, you know, trying to help families blend together, and
right.
these two go on someone else's trip accidentally
okay.
as a best friend of this person and a best friend of that person.
Right.
And of course, you know, she's got the boys and he's got the girls.
Uh-huh.
It's very, why does that happen? It's always in movies that like Mr. Brady, you know, had one lot of boys and Mrs. Brady had girls, and it's
well,
like
I think that's the thing. I think Brady Bunch is setting up like a trope of its own.
Yeah. That everybody has like one set of kids.
Do you know what? I have seen that.
There you go.
It was just so forgettable.
Yes, it's really bad.
Until you explained it, I was like, oh, no, I have.
And there's weird singing interludes with a very buff dude, and it's just like, why?
Gotcha.
And why?
Blended, I mean, that's a very kind of forgettable title as well.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But it's that whole, you know, don't tell me what to do with my kids, and you don't tell me. So there's, yeah, that kind of stuff would happen in relationships that were actually relationships. Yeah. I mean, these guys were kind of thrown together in weird circumstances. Yeah. But, you know, that kind of thing of well, it's my kid, and so I make my kid's rules.
Yes.
Would be a really big strain on parent, new parent relationship, and
And you know what, to be honest, as we were just kind of getting into the whole like complex minefield of all of this blended family stuff, it's like, it's probably pretty difficult to depict in a, you know, 90-minute feature film.
Like, we're also not focusing on the sibling relationships either. Yeah. You know, we're talking about the parental relationships here. There's so much to unpack where there's, you know, siblings. I mean, there would be siblings who kind of became step families, but, you know, what if they were at school together and this one had a crush on that one or hated that one and, like,
so
complex.
It'd be tough.
Yeah.
But actually, I wasn't planning on dropping Mamma Mia into this podcast. And you know, close your ears, I won't speak of it. On the Mamma Mia podcast network, there's a new podcast about divorce. I'm going to forget her name. There's this lady who hosts it, and she's a comedian, and she was married previously to, this sounds awful to say, but, what's the name of the guy from INXS?
Kirk Pengilly?
No.
Michael Hutchins.
Nicole. Michael Hutchins. Rhett Hutchins, his brother, she was married to him.
Oh.
And he had a real heroin problem.
But
since him, that was her first husband, she's gone on to have, I think, four baby daddies.
Oh, wow.
And has this, like, extended kind of beautiful blended family. And so Mia Friedman interviewed her, and I listened to that one. And she was, you know, she's hosting this podcast all about supporting parents through divorce. So if anyone finds themselves in the same position, I can't remember the name of the podcast, but I'll make sure that
I
link to it.
Is it The Split?
Yep, I think that's it.
Mandy Nolan.
Mandy Nolan. That's exactly what it is. Rhett Hutchins, Mandy Nolan. And so I think that would probably be a really good listen if you're going through this. I really liked her interview with Mia because she was just like, we don't have to be so scared of, you know, like, families are complicated and, like, stuff happens and comes up in our lives and we shouldn't fear this whole kind of, like, I'll never fall in love again or, you know, like, it, just because you've not worked out with your children's parent, like, there is a way through navigating how you would do that again. It's hard, but it's doable. And
well, and in Iceland and places like that, like in the Nordic countries, it's very common. Like, this didn't work out, okay, great, next one. Like, we'll see how it works.
I didn't know that.
Very happy with blending all sorts of families, and I think that probably comes a little bit from a village perspective of raising children as well, you know, that it's it's like, okay, well, you may have broken up from this person's biological parent, but we're all parents, you know, we're all...
But how interesting, because I'm sure that it also was born of necessity at a certain point in time, you know, high mortality rates, etc.
Yes.
But it's a culture that's found a way to go, ah, well, this is how we do it, rather than, you know, our Western kind of culture that's kind of like, ah,
bad shame, a fear.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and I think, you know, she was also saying that her experience of having a big blended family was more like a, say, European family with extended family experiences, grandparents, aunts and uncles in the same street, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Where, say, your definition of family is not all about the nuclear family.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're all my family.
That so, village thing.
And it makes you think, like, how – we're such losers, really, like, you know, being obsessed with this idea of the nuclear family.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know the history of that, but I've heard it at some point that it's a fairly arbitrary idea as well, and sort of like promoted through this kind of, you know, American kind of ideal of like, this is the only way of having a family.
Yeah. Well, it would also have come, I imagine, from the whole women as chattel kind of, you know, ownership situation and inheritance and bloodlines and all that sort of stuff. I imagine it kind of comes.
But even then, the aristocracy had a lot of bloody mistresses and like other people on the scene, didn't they?
That's true.
And other people raising their kids and
nannies and interesting, isn't it?
Anyway,
it's a minefield. So yeah, there's lots of stuff that people can read about step parents and step families and all that sort of stuff that Rachel, I'm looking at you, Rachel is going to put on Facebook for us so that we can
Nicole, dive in. Send me a list of all the stuff. I said, we'll link to that. We'll link to this. We'll link to that.
Like there's some magical fairy who does all the linking. Yeah. Hey, PA, do that for us. Yeah no, that is us.
Just so make a note.
We'll get that happening.
So hey, final note, my blue tea is delicious.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Blue magic
I still
is
don't
indeed
really
magic.
Know what butterfly tea is or butterfly peas. Peas.
We're going to have to Google that too.
Still don't know what it is exactly, but it was a very nice tea.
That's excellent.
It was lovely spending this little time with you.
It was lovely spending time with you. And that smells delicious. I'm going to have to try it next time. No, I'm all good at the moment, my love. I've got my water. Thank you. But if people want to find you, Rach, where do they find you?
Littleshopofpop.com.
They do. And they find us at popthekettleon.com.au. You can find us on Facebook at Pop the Kettle On. Please, if you are listening to us through iTunes or Overcast or Spotify, you know, like, subscribe.
Share, like, review.
Share, like, review.
P.S. Why didn't we do this at the start?
What?
Ricky Gervais, if you're listening.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking thanks.
Thanks for the
I'm
like.
I'm just going to assume he listened.
Of course he did.
Yes.
Because, you know, we were talking about him.
Ricky Gervais pushed his finger onto his little phone screen and hit like.
He did.
On our Twitter post.
He did.
Name-checking his afterlife.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could talk forever about that. I loved it so much.
I know.
I'm going to go for a rewatch already.
You know. I totally forgot.
Like, yeah.
God.
I know.
Where are our priorities, man?
I know. We might have to edit this and put it up front.
We will. Just the glory part.
The glory
right
part,
on the front.
Right up front.
You know, like, listen to the rest of this drivel because Ricky Gervais gave us a like. All right. Anyway, please do that. Be like Ricky Gervais. Hit us a like.
Yes.
Share, subscribe, review, all those good things.
Exactly. And until next time, Rach.
Hug your babies.
Hug your babies and be kind to each other and yourselves.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.